This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, with the deficit, with the debt, we have got to start getting control over spending. And President Trump's got that as a top priority, too. So making sure that we get the savings, as well as going to current policy as baseline, allows you to go to permanency instead of 10-year renewal, and then you get an even bigger balance. 10-year renewal would be great. A permanent tax code would be even better.
Well, Steve Scalise talking about the permanency of the tax code, and if we know anything about Steve Moore, our friend, it's that he wants to see those Trump tax cuts be made permanent. Steve Moore joins us once again, distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, also a Trump economic advisor, and his book, The Trump Economic Miracle and the Plan to Unleash Prosperity Again. Steve, welcome back. Always good to have you here.
Hi, Annie. Great to be with you, too. Thank you.
Of course. You've been lobbying hard to make sure that those tax cuts are made permanent. And I assume that you're not wanting to wait until what would it be, the end of September or whatever, when that bill has been pushed to. What's the status right now in Congress on the Trump tax cuts?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that unfortunately, the president hasn't been talking a lot about it for the last month because he's been talking about tariffs, and I think that's he's been off message. And then you've got, the House passed this bill back about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and the Senate's just been dawdling. And there should be a sense of urgency here because, again, I say it each week on your show, I will say it once more, that if we don't get this done before the end of the year, then we're facing a $4 trillion tax increase, and the average family in St. Louis area would be paying about $2,000 to $3,000 more in taxes. So, and every small business would pay more taxes. It would be a horrendous situation. So we got to get this done. I think Wall Street wants to get it done quickly. I think Americans want to make sure that they're not facing a giant tax cliff next year. So I want Trump to get out there and sell the plan, sell it and demand, crack the whip with these senators, get them on board so we can get this done as quickly as possible.
So that you're saying with the senators, is the hang up right now getting the Senate to pass this bill?
Well, so that passed the House, as I said, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now it ping pongs over to the Senate, and the Senate just hasn't done anything. They're, as I said, they're kind of whistling Dixie and taking their time to get it done. And when urgency is important, partly also because the economy is a little fragile right now, the stock market's been on a big sell-off. So we could use some growth stimulants right now, some steroids. And what better to do than to assure all the investors and all the families that their taxes won't go up next year? And then we have the additional stuff like the no tax on tips, the 15% tax rate Trump is talking about for American businesses, the no tax on Social Security. All those things would help the economy a lot as well.
I'm looking right now just at the Fox Business homepage. Steve Moore speaking with us right now. And it looks like 45% of the headlines are on tariffs, 45% of the headlines are on DOGE and cutting. And then there's a couple other, headline news based items there. Do you think that the DOGE part of the equation has been a good story on the whole for the Trump administration and ultimately for the American economy?
Well, also, if you go to the Fox website, you'll see the new ad that we're running on the country on the tax bill telling Congress, get this thing done as quickly as possible. But DOGE, I want to make sure that all of your listeners They, I want them to go after your show is over. I want them to go online and go to the YouTube and take a look at those two amazing interviews that Brett Baer did with the Doge team.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen those,
yes.
Annie, but they are amazing. And the idea that these people are being treated, you know, like Elon Musk and his associates are being treated like they're villains. This is one of the most patriotic missions. None of them are getting paid anything. These are people who are taking their own time, their own money, their own resources to investigate where the waste is in government. The stories that they're telling about the fact we're still using computers in the federal government that were built in the 80s, 40 years old. I mean, it's crazy. The average college student has a better computer than the federal government does. It's just, we're spending $10 billion on rent on empty office buildings. We have thousands of people over the age of 120 that are still getting Social Security checks. We have, spent $500 million on foreign aid. We don't even know where the money went. It went to these NGOs. We don't know what they did with the money. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And this should infuriate voters. We should demand action on this. And, how is it that Elon Musk is treated like a
villain,
scoundrel, when he's doing all this for the country?
It's outrageous. And you just see the emotional reaction from the fringe left. It doesn't have a lot of, it seems like, actual thought process in the reaction that they have towards Doge. Last question.
Well, they say, oh, well, he wasn't elected to do anything. Well, it's true. He's not elected. He's just doing this as a citizen mm-hmm. of our country. This is his patriotic duty to, and this is a guy who's busy. He has SpaceX, he has Tesla, he runs five companies. He's, I don't know how he has the hours in the day to do this. And he's telling us, hey, the government is ripping you off. They're stealing your money. And the fraudsters and the corruption and the incompetence and now it's the example I use is like saying, oh, Al Capone wasn't the problem. It was Elliot Ness for, discovering that he was doing all this criminal activity. Why is the whistleblower here the villain?
I think because people care more about politics than the actual outcome,
they
unfortunately.
Do. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so sick, by the way, not to go off too much on this, but every time you listen to a Democrat, Chuck Schumer or AOC or Elizabeth Warren, all these Democrats, that they're asked about, what do you think about Doge? Oh, well, of course, we're all concerned about waste, but da-da-da-da. Well, the truth is they aren't concerned about waste. They could care less about the waste. And then the question is, why? Why are they allowing this waste and fraud and criminal activity to happen? And I think I know what the answer is. You know what it is?
Tell me. What, Steve?
I think that this is how these guys get rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I think he's the one who's going to root it out.
It.
Yeah. Elon.
They're in on it.
Elon's going to find out.
You've got the Sheldon Whitehouse who, he's so sanctimonious. He's so holier than thou. And he got a $10 million grant and $2.5 million of that money found their way in his wife's bank account. That's just a criminal, graft.
Yeah, it is. And when we find that out and that money train stops, you can see why some people would start to flail a little bit. Steve, thank you. We know your time is precious, and we're always grateful that you share a bit of it with us here on The Andy Frey Show.
Okay. Thanks, Annie. Have a great week.
You as well. Take care. Bye-bye. I mean, I got somebody put on the Illinois Rising Facebook page today. They're like, did Annie really say on her show that there weren't any crimes committed with... all this, the Doge cuts and everything. They said they didn't hear me say it. I guess they heard someone say that I had said that. And the only thing I could think of that we talked about was last week when we said that if the one thing that you're waiting for out of this Trump administration, because we were talking about Pam Bondi, was the perp walk, the handcuffs, the orange jumpsuit, you might not get that. You might not get the visual of the criminal perp walk after charges might be filed here. And I also think that there's going to be a lot of this that is going to be greatly unethical, released to show how all of these things happen, but maybe not illegal. But the idea that there is fraud and criminal behavior going on, that's what Elon Musk is getting to the bottom of it. And will we see some of that? I think we will. But right now, it's almost like fact-finding mission right now, the action to what's going on with Doge. We need to find everything out. We need to get everything out and spread it out on the table so we can see what we're actually dealing with. And have you noticed that when Elon Musk is answering questions, or anybody with Doge is answering questions, that while they get asked about something in particular, they tell you about like five other things that they found in search of an answer for problem A. Now they have identified problem B, C, D, and E, and it just never ends.
Yeah, I think in that conversation, we were talking about how some people just want the image of the perp walk. There can be a lot of illegal stuff that's been going on with a lot of names that we don't know. So there could be a lot of arrests and none of the people that you're suspecting do the orange jumpsuit thing.
There's the people at the top, the faces and the names that we know, they're smart enough.
Yes.
To not have their hands dirty.
And they've been running government. And so the problem with the people, if you're a criminal running government, well, how do you decide whether something's illegal? Well, the government decides that. So if they've made up rules for basically figuring out how to money launder and gotten around the rules, they've probably made those things legal in the process. So some of the illegality they can't get around, but some of the ways they've found to get around things are because they were the ones writing the laws. So the question of illegality becomes very, very weird when you're talking about elected officials.
I think if there's a if there's an opportunity for Donald Trump to perp walk Hillary Clinton, he's not going to pass up on that opportunity.
No, absolutely not. But they tried to do that to him.
Yes, exactly. And I like going back to that particular comparison. The left wanted to see a Donald Trump perp walk. They got a version of it, but in an image. If a picture is worth a thousand words, they didn't have Donald Trump's head being lowered into a police vehicle with his hands cuffed behind his back. They'd have killed to have that. They mistook the value of a Trump mugshot. They got the mugshot. You remember before the mugshot, everyone was like, there's not going to be a mugshot. There's not going to be this. There's not going to be that. I remember hearing people say, and I never really thought of it this way, but the intention, the point of a mugshot is to make sure that everybody can be aware of the face of this person so that in the future you've identified the specific person who's charged. If they end up being convicted, then this person's face out there. You don't need that with Donald Trump. Everybody in the world knows who Donald Trump is. So yeah. You don't really need the mugshot, but they wanted the mugshot because of the value of that. And so I understand on the flip side why Republicans would want to see that as well. I just see the people who we may potentially see experience that are not going to be the people who in one image people are going to see and everybody's going to know who that person is. And it's going to speak a huge political message.
Yes.
You'd have to know some of the details. You know, we're talking about the people at the very tippy top of all of these types of instances. Devin Archer, who was Hunter Biden's business partner, has been granted a pardon. It's a pardon. It's not clemency, correct?
As far as I know.
I think it's a pardon from Donald Trump. And he's been talking about what it's like to work with the Biden
family.
So how
involved was Joe Biden in the Hunter business?
Well, Joe Biden was... he was the brand that we were selling. I think that was, you know, it was a term that came to me looking into Jim Jordan's eyes in the congressional testimony, rolled his sleeves up even higher when
right.
I said that. So that was the brand. That was the access. That was what we did to, you know, to find additional sources of capital or deal flow. So we were selling the Biden brand. I mean, I would say, you know, at the end of a business meeting, you know, I keep it at 20 so I don't perjure myself on the Fox News network. But Joe would end a meeting and say, you do a favor for me. You're my friend. You do a favor for my son. You're a friend for life.
Is that can you charge him with a crime for saying something like that? Like, what is the weight? What is the weight of those words?
It's significant. I mean, the weight of those words is a lot. It's just a matter of what is the actual crime, because what we're seeing now, the shocking thing to me is not that we're seeing behind closed doors and realizing that very, very powerful people were misusing their power for money and for backdoor influence across whatever, just to enrich themselves and make their lives better at the expense of everybody else. What's shocking to me is that there have been movies made about this and stories made about this for hundreds of years, that politicians are dirty, and that we finally start to see it and people start to protect. There's a portion of our population that want to protect the politicians. I never thought we'd see that. And that's what's shocking to me.
We said at the beginning of the show that if we got to 300 votes by our 2 o'clock hour, so we still got about 40 minutes, a little over 40 minutes left by the time we open the mics in the 2 o'clock hour. If we get 300 votes in our YouTube poll today, that we'll take questions on it, but through your phone calls. The poll question is, would you support a third term for president? Yes or no? I played earlier the clip from Air Force One where Trump is asked repeatedly by a reporter. He's like, I don't really want to talk about that. And some would say this is my third term. He doesn't say, no, I'm not running for a third term. He doesn't give them that. And that is a very calculated response on his part. But if he gives a 3-minute response to that question, 20 seconds of it is dedicated to saying, well, I'm not really wanting to get into that. And then he explains why maybe this is his third term. And then he starts talking about things that he has done that is successful, or he starts trashing what the Biden administration did to him and so on and so forth. And the rest of the 3 minutes is him doing what he does, which is talking about whatever he gosh darn pleases. So if we get to 300 votes and we're at 228 right now, so this is well within range, we will take some of your phone calls in the 2 o'clock hour on the question, would you support a third term for President Trump? Here is Tim said, do I think he would do a good job? Yes. Should he run? No. Let's pay attention to the Constitution and don't let him bring it up. People asking if he would is just trying to start crap. That is a very well thought out response. Quick Rick said no, although the need for a consistently applied course for the country would be beneficial. We can't turn the nation around in 4 years. And Steven said, I voted no. If Trump could run for a third, I feel it would go against every principle of change that we are pushing for now. I still support President Trump all of the way, lifelong Republican. So get on the Annie Fry YouTube channel right now, youtube.com/@AnnieFry, and vote in our poll. We're up to 234 votes right now. And I'm going to tell you what, it's closer than I thought it would be. So you need to let us know, do you think that's good or bad? There's nothing that the lefties would want more than to see this go 90%. Yeah, I'd support a Trump third term. So we'll see what the people of the Annie Fry Show listening right now think by calculating their votes there on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Let's take a quick break. If we get to 300 votes on the poll, we'll take some phone calls in the 2 o'clock hour. Might make that a thing now from now on. Actively participate in the poll and maybe we'll go to some phone calls. When we come back, Will Chamberlain is going to be with us. Of course, he is the senior counsel to the Article 3 Project, and he's going to talk to us about Congress's efforts to limit the district judges that are using their positions to be activists against Donald Trump's agenda. Will Chamberlain next on the Annie Fry Show.
So what do we do now in the Senate? There are a couple of different ideas. Explain them clearly to the people watching tonight, because they think, well, you can't stop a court. A court wants to rule. All right. Why isn't that okay?
One of the best things we could do is pass legislation that I introduced day before yesterday that would limit the jurisdiction of the courts, making it so that a single district judge can't issue an injunction against the U.S. government with nationwide applicability on a major matter of presidential policy. It needs to be going through a 3-judge district court with an automatic direct appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States. It'd make it very difficult to judge shop, and it would make it so we get a final resolution from the Supreme Court.
Would
quickly.
This be a rotating panel
yes.
of district court judges?
Rotating panel. District court
random.
Judges selected by the Chief Justice at random from available district judges around the country. That way you can't go into this if you're an NGO, if you're one of these liberal activist groups. You can't just judge shop and know that if you file in a certain district, odds are pretty good you're going to get a lefty.
Senator Lee there talking about judge shopping. We're hearing a lot of this right now about the pushback against Donald Trump. And I'm scratching my head going, how is it that you can just kind of set up this house of cards to try to push back against something if you don't have the legislative power in Congress because you're in the minority in the House and in the Senate? How can you use the judiciary in this fashion in order to push back against Donald Trump when it seems to be very politically motivated? Well, since I'm not a legal expert and don't pretend to be one at all, Will Chamberlain's back with us, and we're really grateful for his expertise, of course. Senior counsel at the Article 3 Project on X at Will Chamberlain. Will, welcome back. It's always good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Annie.
So can you talk to me a little bit about what judge shopping is, how the left is using this as a way to push back against Trump?
Well, I mean, it's something both sides have used in the past. Obviously, the left is using it more now because they're trying to stop the administration. But the basic idea is that there are a lot of judicial districts in this country, and some of them have more liberal judges and more conservative judges. Some of them are small enough that they only have one judge. So if you file a lawsuit in that courthouse, you know basically who your judge is going to be. So that, you know, opens up a possibility, especially when you're filing a case and you're seeking a nationwide injunction. Well, you want to go find a judge that is most likely to agree with you. So if you're a liberal, that means going to a hard left district where you're confident that you know the judge and you know that they'll go along with you. That's judge shopping.
So when Senator Mike Lee is looking to push back against this, I mean, I assume there are some avenues that can be used. I heard on, I think it was Outnumbered or it was Harris Faulkner's show earlier today, an expert talking about how a lot of what is done in Washington is creating the system to be so burdensome that people are afraid to even engage in things that would be transformative to how, you know, things work. I think we call that the swamp. And when things become so burdensome and so scary because, oh, the legal battle is going to be enormous, then what ends up happening is you kind of scrap things before they even start. Is that part of the factor of what the swamp has been doing, at least pre-Donald Trump 2.0?
Yeah, I mean, they want to demoralize people who actually want to change the system, certainly. And there are all sorts of entrenched interest groups who also want to demoralize the administration and don't want to let the administration do anything that might hurt them in any way. So you're going to get lawsuits. I think generally in the past, we haven't had administrations who are devoted or really aggressively trying to fight through that, who are happy to be in power or otherwise willing to focus on things where they won't face as much judicial pushback. But that's not this current Trump administration. Clearly, the Trump administration is willing to pick all these battles and is planning to fight them as long as they need to. And truly, in some cases, if needed, potentially even disregard courts that are infringing on the president's core Article 2 powers. Hopefully, though, that won't be necessary. And I think what this is doing, though, is really highlighting, obviously, the problem with the system where a single district judge can impose an injunction that binds the administration throughout the entire country. And it creates this judge shopping dynamic and the ability of, you know, 160 some judges each to have an individual veto on the administration's policy. That's not the way our system is supposed to work. And so, I mean, the Mike Lee's suggestion, I think, is a good one where it just ends judge shopping and ensures that a three judge panel has to agree that an injunction would be necessary. I've heard of other solutions that also could be interesting, limiting the effect of a nationwide injunction just to the district in which that judge is ruling, prohibiting them from going beyond the parties to that case, and in some cases restructuring our courts to strip them of jurisdiction over particular issues so that where the politics of it is kind of determining how the judges rule. So all those are good ideas. And I think, you know, I just hope Congress is able to push some of them forward.
Yeah, I think that that's the question mark, of course, is that if Congress would be willing to come together for this. Do you feel as though I was just thinking it was this morning or something about how a lot of this has gone. There have been comments made by the Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, that have some Trump people scratching their heads. We've seen Amy Coney Barrett not rule in the way that I think Donald Trump would have preferred that she ruled. There's no possibility that the Republicans start talking about expanding the court right now. Is there?
I mean, there's an interesting option to say that, you know, we need to have a constitutional amendment that fixes the number of judges on the court at 9. And then if the Democrats won't agree to pass it, then we're going to pack the court ourselves.
I like that's kind
right?
of interesting.
Like, it's like one or the other. Like, you either agree that this isn't just going to be a norm anymore. This is going to be a permanent structure. Or if you don't agree to this, then we assume that you'll do it when you have the chance. So we're just going to beat you to it. Which I think is actually the right attitude, honestly. Like, I think that needs to be a serious discussion I had with Schumer, that, like, while we have the majority.
What you just said is my co-host is going to fall off his chair because he's so excited about what you just said about
right.
that idea of doing it that way.
Right.
He's A-OK.
That's, I mean, but it's what we should do. I mean, Democrats do unprecedented things all the time. The only reason they didn't pack the court when they had Joe Biden in power is because you had two Democrat senators who are holding the line on the filibuster and holding the line on norms, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They're both gone. They're out of office. So who's left among the Democrats who's willing to stand up and say, I'm not going to get rid of the filibuster or I'm going to block any attempt to pack the court? And if the answer is zero, then Republicans shouldn't be suckers. We should force them to, you know, present it. It's an ultimatum. Like, either you agree to permanently fix the court at 9 seats, or we add 6 more, 7 more. We're going to spend the entire a ton of time in the Senate just adding Supreme Court justices, so many that you won't be able to confirm them. We'll just keep doing it.
We should stop this interview right now. Everybody should stop what they're doing and make that happen. Vote on it or lose at your own game. Will Chamberlain is a genius. I don't know if you came up with that or if you heard it. But
not my idea. I wish I had.
Yeah, as far as the Annie Fry show is concerned, Will Chamberlain, you just blew our minds on that. That doesn't happen very often.
Right.
I want to ask you about the just a little bit outside of the court system, but the attacks that the left is making on Tesla. There, I hear people talking regularly about how this is terrorism or this is not terrorism. This is just vandalism. And I'm wondering what your thought is on the appropriate way for our justice system to approach these people who are having a really, really rough time with Donald Trump being the president, and their natural reaction is to see a Tesla and just black out and start vandalizing things. Is it important for an administration to push back on something specific like this, which is obviously an ideology that they are opposed to that's causing this vandalism to occur? What is the just thing to happen for these people who are building on this Tesla vandalism march?
Yeah, throw the book at them. And certainly that's not something the Democrats hesitated to do at all with, you know, for example, the J6 protesters. Throw the book at them. They're committing crimes. And I'm not super familiar with the terrorism statutes, but my guess is those statutes read something like, if you commit a crime with the purpose of getting a political actor to do or not do something, that becomes a terroristic crime. You commit a violent crime with that intention, that becomes terrorism, and that increases the sentencing. And we have a lot of different places in the law where your intent or what you're trying to accomplish with a crime can increase the sentencing. Hate crimes is the most obvious example. Like, if you commit a crime motivated by racial animus, that increases the punishment. So same here. I would assume that those laws are already on the books. I'm just not an expert, so I don't know. But if those laws are on the books, you throw the book right at those protesters.
Do you feel as though Pam Bondi, as the attorney general, is going as fast and as hard as we need her to go?
Yeah, I mean, she's only we're barely 2 months into the administration. You know, I think we're spoiled. A lot of things have run really well for us so far. For example, border crossings are down 95% in 2 months. That's crazy. Really credit to the administration for understanding how to really, you know, deter illegal immigration. They've done a great job of that. And we're pushing forward on any number of fronts. So she's a very busy woman. I suspect, you know, they've opened those investigations. The law moves slowly. You need to collect all the evidence. You need to get what you need to. And there have been some indictments already. I know that there have been some federal indictments going forward, but it just takes time. You have to identify the people. If they do a good job covering their tracks, wearing masks, things like that, then it probably is trickier. But I have not seen anything to make me think that it is Pam Bondi's fault that indictments aren't moving faster.
So Will Chamberlain, speaking with us right now with the Article 3 Project, expert when it comes to these, the justice system, the legal issues that we're facing as a country, that the administration is facing. We've had a kind of an ongoing conversation on this show about the desire for people to see the perp walks. They want to see handcuffs. They want to see orange jumpsuits. They just really, really want the visual. And I've been trying to say to people, and you might admonish me on this and say that I'm wrong, and that's fine, but the success of the Trump administration can't boil down to just who we see perp walked, because you might never see the perp walk that you've been dying to see, and yet the transformation can still happen, the corruption can be rooted out, the fraud can be exposed. What do you think about that, especially on social media, that clamoring for people to see the arrests, the perp walks, the handcuffs, the whole nine yards?
So, I mean, first off, it takes a while, right? And you should think about it from what the Democrats had worked, you know, baying like wolves trying to get Trump arrested and indicted. It took them 3 years before they got that. So we're 2 months in. They had to wait 3 years for their indictments. And so and also here, another thing to think about, you know, they lost the election and all those indictments dissipated into thin air, basically. You know, they got the J6 indictments because those were easier. Mm-hmm. They were much simpler. There was sort of bipartisan, you know, congressional work to, you know, give DOJ the resources. And in many ways, it was just, you know, people weren't wearing masks or doing anything to hide their identity or location. And they were committing, you know, they'd committed obvious crimes based on these statutes. So it was just very straightforward with a lot of what people want in terms of indictments. If you want them to stick, take some time, They just got started. They probably got to fight through a lot of existing DOJ hires who aren't willing to help them or who are going to slow walk. It's just it's going to take more than 2 months. I think everybody needs to, like, you know, retrench and also realize that it's not, you know, the real question is not whether we get these indictments done in 6 months or a year or 2 years. The question is, we got to win again, right? We got to win in 28. We got to have a durable majority, because if, you know, if you do something slipshod, well, then it goes up, you know, it gets thrown out by the judges. It goes up on appeal. There's all sorts of ways that people can fight back against lawfare, as we demonstrated against all the fight back that we were able to accomplish against the Trump lawfare. And then if you lose and it's politically motivated lawfare, well, then the pardons come out, right? Like, you know, that Pandora's box has certainly been opened at this point. I would expect that, you know, God forbid Democrats win in 28, their president will take office day one and pardon and commute every sentence that was has any political valence whatsoever. So I think the measure of the success of the administration is not going to be what powerful people from the other side go to jail. The measure of the success of the administration is going to be, do we win again? And that's not, you know, that's going to ultimately be like, do we solve the immigration problem? Do we, you know, do we make this country safe again? Do we solve the economic problems? Do we solve our foreign policy problems?
That's great perspective.
And then if we do those things, then we'll have the time to ensure that the people who commit the crimes will ultimately face justice and not be pardoned instantly.
Hey, Will, this is Ryan, the guy who is really excited about you playing hardball on the court packing stuff. So I just back to that issue really quick before we run out of time with you. When Mike Johnson comes out and hints at something like, well, if these nationwide injunctions on the president don't stop, like you said, all these just random judges have veto power of the president. We've never seen this before, never intended it to be this way. And Mike Johnson says, well, we have some tools in our shed here. One of them being that we could defund courts. Is that actually likely? Is that politically likely? And then are they really serious about doing something like that?
I think in the event that the courts shut down the president, the president asked them to cut their budget allocation, I think that'll happen. And I mean, it wouldn't take much to really make the job of these courts a lot harder. It would be a big shot across the bow and a big reminder to Judge Roberts, or Justice Roberts, rather, that you guys, you are co-equal. You are not superior. You know, you are a co-equal branch. The executive and the legislative branch get to push back on you, take your authority away if you anger them and are doing things that are illegitimate. So, you know, that's one of many tools. I also think one thing Republicans are starting to understand is Democrats are terrified of a government shutdown right now, because they're terrified of what Elon Musk will do if he's not constrained by Congress, if he has the authority to determine what employees are essential. So that gives us insane leverage, you know, coming up in 6 months, if we're still dealing with these temporary restraining orders, basically it can be a take it or leave it offer to the Democrats for continuing to fund the government. That includes provisions like, you don't agree to this, you know, you need to agree to strip these district courts of their temporary restraining order authority, or we'll go to a shutdown and we'll do all sorts of things you don't like. So there's a lot of power that we have. And I mean, it may force them to the table to negotiate. They might think to themselves, too, that, well, we really don't want a shutdown. And also, in the event that we win power in the future, this will hamstring the way conservatives might try and use the temporary restraining order against us, which is true.
Yeah.
You know, we certainly did have used the courts when we're out of power to try and push back on what the government is doing. And we've engaged in our own judge shopping, as I mentioned. So I think there's a real possibility that the Democrats might see it in their decide it's in their best interest to make a deal with us on this.
Will Chamberlain, what a wonderful conversation. We love when you come on with us, and it's interesting to hear. It always feels like when we're in the minority that the Democrats, they just do everything that they can get their fingers on and then some in order to push the Republicans down. And it's interesting to hear this side while we are not in the minority. We appreciate you, Will. We look forward to having you back again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Will Chamberlain is a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. Go say hello to him on X if you enjoyed that conversation, at Will Chamberlain. And you can go to Article 3, the number 3project.org, if you want to learn a little bit more about him. Really great conversation. I love that. And I mean, duh, why wouldn't you put up amendment right now that says we're going to codify that the Supreme Court has 9 justices on it? Do it right now. And if the Democrats vote against it, then do it. Pack the court.
I can't believe I haven't heard this yet.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of why.
It's such a good idea.
It's like, if not this, then that. And if the Democrats aren't going to agree to it because they want to pack the courts, then you have to beat them to the punch. If they don't mm-hmm. want the Republicans to do it, for the same reason the Republicans wouldn't want the Democrats to do it, then compromise, shake hands, nine it is.
Donald Trump is really good at leverage. What was Will Chamberlain just talking about over and over and over?
All of it.
With different mm-hmm. issues, too. Yeah. That was the main one. But there was others in there talking about how they could use the government shutdown to leverage some things. It's all about the leverage that creatively maybe hasn't been used in the past, but it's time to use the leverage that Congress has.
Yeah. Mind blown. Had never heard of that, never thought of it. Will says he didn't come up with it, but in my mind, he did. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We need 20 votes to take phone calls on the YouTube live chat poll question. And I have a feeling that if we do take phone calls on this, I have a feeling we're going to get some people who are very, like, measured. No. Would you support a third term for President Trump? Yes or no? No, because that goes against the Constitution. That's against what we want. I have a feeling we might get some people on the left who would call, present themselves like a MAGA Republican and talk about why absolutely, yes, you should do this.
Oh, you'd think, really?
Possibly. And then, of course, there might be some people on the other side who are like, how could we possibly be having this conversation?
You know what we should do is when you go to call, you should have to show voter ID.
Yeah, you have to come here and say, I need to see Ethan Hannaford. And he's going to be like, that's not a real ID. I don't accept it. We want to know, would you support a third term for President Trump? Yes or no? YouTube.com/@AnnieFry. The voting is in the live chat of the live broadcast. Come vote. Leave it. You got 18 people left, and we're taking phone calls at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. We'll be right back before the 2 o'clock hour with a little bit about our weekends. Don't go away.
Annie Fry Show.
So this weekend, I went to Macoupin County.
Macoupin?
Macoupin. It's not that far north. Macoupin? Eh?
I just like saying it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I don't even
sure.
know if it's an accent.
Yeah, it's like the South compared to Chicago.
Yeah.
Went to Macoupin County and spoke at their Lincoln Day dinner. And oh my gosh, this place that they had this event at, I was told by Jenny, one of the people who was putting this together, they did such an amazing job of putting together Lincoln Day dinner. Now, listen, I'm going to say this, and some people are going to be like, why is she saying that? And you're going to hear it negatively. I don't mean this negatively. But Lincoln Day dinners, when you go to enough of them, county to county to county, and I've been to a few, there is a lot of similarity when you go from one to the next. This venue that the Macoupin County Lincoln Day dinner was at, I believe it was called The Rustic. And I believe it was in a place called or near a city called Standard City. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, it's what you judge everything by. Every other city, you judge it against the plumb line of Standard City.
And she told me, she's like, you're going to drive to this place and you're going to keep driving and you're going to be like, where is she leading me to? Because when you're driving in quadrants, because you're driving through plats of farmland. But I was like, I grew up in and around the country, have always been very keenly aware of like being out in farm territory and understanding what that was like. And she was right. It's like out there in the middle of Macoupin County, not nowhere. And it was such a wonderful event. The food was amazing. I think it was by, off the top of my head, a barbecue group called Fat Albert or something like that. You know, it's going to be a good one. It's called Fat Albert Barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a full room. They said they had over 100% increase in people turning out for this event over last year. Like there's something in Macoupin
amazing.
County, that I think is being experienced in other counties across the state of Illinois that is encouraging people to be motivated to participate. And I was really excited to be a part of it. And it was a really wonderful event. I was really grateful for the opportunity. And I just want to encourage other people right now listening. I talked to at least a half a dozen different people who said, I'd never done anything like this before, but I decided to get in contact with my county group. It was like within the last year or two, but you could tell it was definitely based on the November election.
Interesting.
Get involved in your county Republican group. Find them. I think honestly, the best thing to do is find them on Facebook. Insert your county GOP, your county Republicans, whatever. Learn about them and then just go to an event. Just participate in an event. You don't have to be somebody who's writing a monthly check. I mean, although I'm sure they'd be happy to take that. But go to their golf scramble event. Go to their Lincoln Day dinner. Show up at a chicken and beer event or something like that. Whatever they have, go participate and start being around other people who think like you, who are motivated by the right things and success. And in the state of Illinois, it becomes a little... it's not always a positive feeling to, like, if you're going to an Illinois Republican thing, it's like, gosh, what's even the point? And honestly, there's such a huge point. There's such a shift in Illinois right now. I think it's +8 for Trump, maybe +9 for Trump in the last election. And the thing of it all is that the Democrats so successfully gerrymandered the state that there's zero reflection in our representative government because the Democrats were really good at what they did. So we have to double down and fight even harder. And it's no different in Missouri, other than the fact that you have a supermajority of Republicans running things in your state. You still have to make sure that those Republicans are listening to the people. And if you become super disenfranchised, you know, if the local politics or if the state politics become annoying to you, so you kind of put your hand up and say, I'm not really interested in being a part of that, then you get what you deserve, which is whatever they want to do. You can get together with great people who are very passionate. You know, when I go to these different county events, they're all talking about their local county interests. And it was wonderful to, I was north of Carlinville, and we 97.1 comes in crystal clear there. I did not know that.
I didn't know where it stopped around that area.
Macoupin County is Lincoln's top hat for Madison County. That's okay. How I remember it. It's okay. Like a tall rectangle. Madison County is kind of a long rectangle, and Macoupin County goes right on the top. And so you can go north for a while in Macoupin County. Carlinville, I think, is like in the middle, if not maybe just a little south of the middle line there. But we still come in crystal clear there. So please consider sharing this show, this station, if you're listening to me right now, maybe for the first time, because there were a lot of people there who didn't know that we were on the map. We don't do a lot of events in Macoupin County. I don't know if there has ever been a St. Louis Talk Radio event in Macoupin County. I think we should. I have an idea, though. What if 97.1 did their own Lincoln Day dinner?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yes.
That would be good.
And it could be bi-state. It could be, we could do a Missouri one, and we could do an Illinois one maybe every other year or something. But what if we did a 97.1 Lincoln Day dinner?
I'm attending.
I'm in.
Would you all come? We would love that.
I drove out to Mount Vernon this weekend, and it was the same situation. I kept listening to see how far it goes.
The proper term is down. No?
Not really.
Over?
Over.
Over, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a rainy day, so our signal wasn't going quite as far as I think it usually does. But I was still listening in Mount Vernon.
That's
a nice city. It's a really nice city.
Civia Law has an office in Mount Vernon. He's told me before that, yeah, we get that down there. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
The YouTube live chat poll, would you support a Trump third term for president? We have 303 votes, so we're going to take phone calls. When we come back, you can hurry up and get in line right now. I just unblocked the phones. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. Get in line, get on hold, and we'll take phone calls when we come back. 314-241-9797.